thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today on StashMyComics.com podcast episode number 18. We are powered by Geek Energy. Just want to let you know that you'll never know if we're in our Spider-Man PJs or not. I may or may not be, but with me, as always, is Jason, our editor at StashMyComics.com. Jason, how you doing today?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm great. Fantastic. Just got back from my vacation to Cedar Point. And if you look at me from the left, I look really tan. But if you look at me from the right, I look really white.
So you're like two-faced.
Yeah, kind of. But half sunburnt and half not.
driver's tan.
Yes, yes, my driver's tan. Speaking of which, Tom, he is our author of Geek Cinema, who does not have a driver's tan. Tom, how are you doing today?
I am good. I go from white to white to white to lobster.
I have to have SPF 85 on my
head. Thereabouts, yeah.
Yeah, or new burn. Last but not least, we have Matt, the producer of StashMyComics.com podcast. He's the man behind the scenes, the Oz of our geek energy. Matt, how you doing?
I cannot complain.
Fantastic. I wouldn't complain either if I was in Chicago.
Yeah, not so bad here.
Okay, so we've got a redesign of the site. We need to talk about that for a second because that is some big news. That's a big deal. I mean, we did some kind of hinting around about it a couple of months ago when we changed the logo on Twitter and for the podcast, and then it just kind of trickled in piece by piece from there until where we're at now, where everybody has had a chance at least to dive into the beginning parts of the website. Jason, Matt, Tom, you guys are looking at it. What do you think about it? What do you think about the redesign?
Pretty slick. I mean, I like the fact that all the articles, the blog stuff, the member reviews, it's right there. It's very vibrant.
I like the fact that if you compare the two sites from the first, what it originally was to what it is now, I mean, the color scheme and just the vibrancy of it all is so much more in your face now than it was before. I mean, all the news articles are right there in front of you. The member reviews, which has always been my favorite part of the website, is now very prominent. So you can see. I hope that gets more people to do their own reviews of the comics and stuff, because I love reading that. I enjoyed that a lot. Matt, what do you think of the new redo?
Yeah, I think I commented on this somewhere. Maybe it was just in an email or a text, but it looks... I mean, it's so much better in terms of design and functionality, but also it looks very professional, very, not to say that, you know, whoever's Igor and stuff is not professional, but it makes the site, makes us definitely look like a bigger website than maybe we were before. And I hope that'll continue to climb and grow.
Tom, you're on there right now. Tell us your thoughts. What do you think?
Is it live, right?
Oh, wait a minute. Say that one more time.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead. The site's gone live, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, we're live.
It looks the same to me.
No, he. I think he's seeing the wrong one. He's asking if the site was live. It's not till this weekend, right?
That's why. Okay. Yeah, I didn't get the link to it yet.
Oh. Okay. If you're seeing the old one, chances are, yeah, it's the old one because it looks drastically different.
Yeah. Okay. But I'm sure when I see it, I'm going to adore it. I really like how it's going to look.
It's going to look fantastic. You will not be disappointed, I promise you.
When I do eventually get into my browser, I'm going to be very impressed.
Geek Cinema will be at new heights because of the redo.
And because it will be at the top of the page, always.
Well, yeah, there you go. Moving on, let's talk a little bit, before we get into the news, let's talk a little bit about The Dark Knight Rises. That's coming out tomorrow as of this recording, but there's already buzz about it for Best Picture nomination. Jason, what are your expectations when you go to see this? Because from what I've seen, it's got mostly positive reviews for the advanced reviews that have come out now, but some negative.
Well, it's probably heresy, but I didn't care much for the second one.
Wow.
Yeah, we've covered that.
Yeah. it's a fine enough film, but it was about a half hour too long. So I hope this one doesn't take 3 hours to tell a story that they could tell in 2 hours. I mean, I'm excited. I'm going to see it in IMAX. I'm really looking forward to that. So I'm trying not to get too pumped because I don't want the Amazing Spider-Man to happen to me again, where I go in real excited and then come out and I'm all, oh.
You need to stay in fanboy mindset the entire time you're in there.
I'm going to try.
Matt, what are your thoughts? What are your hopes and dreams for The Dark Knight Rises?
I am hoping that it is as good as the other ones, which I'm assuming it will be. I think Nolan has done a great job. I do slightly agree with Jason that maybe sometimes they're too long and may drag on a little bit more than necessary. But, you know, Catwoman's one of my favorite villains, and I love Anne Hathaway, so I'm super psyched about that part.
Do you think that she was a good choice for Catwoman?
I guess time will tell. I wasn't crazy about the costume initially, but I think she'll pull it off. She wouldn't have been my first choice by any stretch of the imagination. I was surprised to see her picked, but because I like her as an actress, I was like, okay, well, this will work. I like her. I like Catwoman. But I'm planning on seeing it tomorrow, and like you, I've seen mostly good reviews.
Yeah.
You know, there was some guy in the USA Today complaining about Bane's performance because he had to wear a mask, and I'm like, well, he has to wear a mask. I mean, what?
Obviously, that person has never read a Batman comic book, then.
Exactly. So you're going to get critics like that.
Tom, tell me your thoughts. But before you do, I read somewhere on Google News today that somebody said that Bane was created specifically to target against Mitt Romney.
Yeah, that would be Rush Limbaugh said that on Tuesday.
Yeah, what is the deal with that?
I'm not entirely. I think the deal with it is that Rush Limbaugh is crazy. I think is the deal with that. I'm pretty sure. Apparently that's some really good campaign strategizing. They started it back in 1993.
I guess they were getting ahead of the game.
hey Tom, if the Times happens to come out with an article about why we like The Dark Knight Rises and why we're wrong for liking it, we can't expect a rebuttal on Geek Cinema, right?
Oh yeah, certainly. I'll handle it. Listen, okay. I've got the Times covered. They're scared of me.
Good.
They're all right. They're running for the hills. And I expect this film to unveil the secrets of the universe to us.
I'm hoping so.
Yeah, to cure world hunger.
To be the end all for Batman. After this, Nolan and Bale are done.
Yes, they are.
And I've heard rumors that Batman is supposed to die at the end of this, but I don't know about that. If they do that, they've got to do it right. But if they don't do it, then it's got to end in such a way that the story can carry on in our hearts and dreams and all that.
Just based on the reviews I've read, and I've read a bunch actually, because I don't really care much about being spoiled. I've guarded myself from the trailers and the clips and whatnot. It looks, I guess not my fear, but I almost expect at this point the movie's going to be somewhat ponderous. And I hear it's just like mostly getting hit in the face with a shovel for 4 hours. It's just depressing, is what I've heard. I'm not even making that up. It's like life sucks, and then we kill Batman. And that's kind of, it's like 3 hours of that. It's done brilliantly.
What?
I mean, it's no Mystery Men, but.
Hey, nothing can top Mystery Men. We were talking about this in the pre-show meeting, so leave Mystery Men alone.
Aren't you glad you missed all that, Tom?
Oh, darn it. I wish I could turn back time and still not sign off.
Ladies and gentlemen of the podcast listening audience, Mystery Men, if you have not seen it, you must stop listening to this. Pause it where it's at right now.
Yeah.
And then when you come back, you can leave your comments below on Mystery Men, and I'll be more than happy to talk to you about how awesome it was and how awesome the Shoveler was. So,
tell our 12 listeners to stop listening and go watch a bad comic book movie. Good job.
Or go watch Maximum Overdrive. Speaking of which, I just need to mention that I have a new buddy that loves Maximum Overdrive as much as
Excellent.
I do. TwoGuns365 on the forums. This is what he had to say about Maximum Overdrive. He says that he's with me on how awesome it is, and the movie is the reason why he stands to the side when he gets a soda out of the vending machine.
If anybody's
ever seen the movie, you'll know why.
Yeah. Well, it's you and Two Guns that have seen that film, so.
And that's all that needs.
And me.
Oh, and yes, and Matt saw it, so
Matt,
the three of you.
Anytime.
If Matt was with us last week, I would have had help against the rest of you guys.
You could use help.
I can. Well, we're going to take a break for a second, but when we come back, we're going to hit up our news, and it's going to be about Marvel's Phase 2 for the next line of movies. We'll be back in just a second.
Stash my comics.
Stash my comics.
Stash my comics.
Powered by Geek Energy.
Okay, guys, right now we're going to hit up the news. Phase 2 for Marvel Cinema. This is what they announced at Comic-Con. So this is what we can look forward to. We have Guardians of the Galaxy with an expected release date of August 1st. In 2014, then we're looking at the sequel to Thor, which is going to be called The Dark World. Then we're looking at Captain America, Winter Soldier, which I am very excited about. We'll talk about that in a second. We're also looking at the third movie for Iron Man with Ben Kingsley as the Mandarin and Ant-Man. So let's talk about this.
Yay! Which one does not belong here?
Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, this came out a long time ago, back in the 70s, and then it just kind of faded away into obscurity until the 90s when it was brought back out, and it didn't last that long either. Jim Valentino had a significant run on Guardians until it, again, faded away into obscurity. But recently, with, like, the Annihilation storyline and things like that, Guardians has kind of made a comeback. So what are your guys' thoughts on that, having Guardians of the Galaxy as next on the list of Marvel to do? Out of all the characters that they have, why did they choose Guardians of the Galaxy?
I don't know. I'm glad that they did. Because I'm a huge fan of this series. I got the first six in digital, and then the second trade of the, I guess, the 2008 run, was it? And
right.
I can't get enough of Rocket Raccoon and all the other insane characters. This is just an insane choice, and I love them for doing this.
Well, see, what this tells me is that this is going in line more and more with Thanos. I mean, I'm expecting to see at least more of a hint to him in Guardians, because Guardians is going to be Marvel's answer to the Green Lantern Corps for DC.
Yeah.
Jason, what do you think about that?
It'll probably be better than Green Lantern.
Well, anything better than Green Lantern. Overdrive is better than Green Lantern.
That's too far.
Well, that I believe.
having never read any Guardians of the Galaxy anything, and having only seen the comical Rocket Raccoon character. I guess I'm excited just for the fact that it'll probably be handled very well. And I do like stories about the Marvel universe that doesn't center on Earth. Like, Annihilation was great because it was, you know, characters you never see.
Well, I mean, Annihilation brought Nova back from obscurity. Like, the last time we had seen him was in various Spider-Man issues and what was left of the New Warriors.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm excited for the fact that it'll be something I haven't experienced, I guess, in this whole universe of cosmic Marvel stuff.
Right. Tom, what are your thoughts on all of this?
You know, Guardians of the Galaxy. I have two thoughts, I guess. One, I'm glad they're trying it. And with Green Lantern, they have a template of what not to do. I'm glad that they're gonna dip into the Marvel cosmic universe, which has its a small but very devoted group of fans. So let's see if they can translate to big screen success. And I hope against hope that they go ahead and they do the right thing and they cast Liev Schreiber as Rocket Raccoon.
Well,
am I alone in that?
I don't even know what to say about it. I don't even know who he is.
Saber Tooth.
Oh, okay, right on. He'd be good. Moving forward, let's talk about Thor 2. That kind of falls right in line with Guardians of the Galaxy. The title alone, The Dark World. I mean, is Guardians and Thor 2 going to... Are their storylines going to kind of connect? Is that what it's looking at? Because what they've said before the announcement of the title, that they were going to go to the outer reaches of the Marvel Universe, like as far as the galaxy is concerned. So maybe we'll get a hint of Guardians in Thor 2 before Guardians comes out, vice versa, or whatever. But I think that this may deal more with Thanos than any of the other movies. Matt, thoughts?
Loved Thor 1. Glad to see a sequel. I don't know much about anything Thor. I don't read a whole lot of Thor, so these movies are just fun for me because of that reason. I don't have any baggage coming into them, so
okay.
I don't know much about the Thor villains or the myth or anything. But the first one was good. Let's try another one.
Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, like, man, I'm pretty much next to nothing about Thor outside of his, role as an Avenger. I hear the term Dark World, and I don't have the foggiest idea what it could actually refer to from what my limited knowledge of Thor lore.
Maybe it's like Ragnarok without any lights on.
I mean, I guess so. I hear Dark World, I think Zelda 3, but that's just me, I suppose.
Right on, there we go. Jason, what do you think?
Well, the big question for me is if Natalie Portman's going to be in that one.
I hope so.
She's very pretty to look at. So
she is.
No, see, I mean, Thor 1 was very well done for being filmed on a handycam. I mean, I'm excited to see where they're going to go with it, just because Thor is one of those characters that I think can be boring because he's so powerful.
Well,
I don't know. I'm excited to see where they're going to go with it.
Thor was the date movie of Marvel films. So are they going to keep that? It was. I mean, how many guys do you know that took their girlfriends to go see Thor? You know, and how many girls said, oh, he's so dreamy.
I don't know any girl who said, oh, he's so dreamy.
It's possible. It's possible. My wife said it. That was the first movie we saw in 3D, and that made her a fan of 3D from that day forward. And she won't let me see any movies not in 3D.
I just hope they do the right thing and cast Liev Schreiber as Beta Ray Bill.
Do you have some kind of odd fascination with Liev Schreiber?
I don't know what you're talking about.
He was great in Scream. What was he in Scream 3?
Cotton Weary.
Okay, let's talk about Iron Man 3. That's the one that's in production right now. We've seen the Hall of Armor, the seven suits that have come onto screen since Iron Man, Iron Man 2, The Avengers, and now with Iron Man 3. Ben Kingsley as the Mandarin. Guys, what do we think about that? Is that a good choice?
It's a great actor, so I've got no problem with it, yeah.
Yeah, but with the Mandarin, he's Oriental. Ben Kingsley's British.
No, I understand that. I mean, and you know, Ben Kingsley, British, the first role you think of him as, I guess, is Gandhi.
Tom, you're killing me today.
I get the, of course, the ethnicity, the race. It's not the right ethnicity at all. But it's Mandarin. I don't care if they change his ethnicity. I just don't.
And what about
I'm more. I'm more interested to see Fing Fang Foom than the Mandarin.
I want to know who's going to be in the Super Patriot armor. I know they're not calling it the Super Patriot armor, but by God, it's the Super Patriot armor. It looks just like it. That's what it is.
Well, I just hope they do the right thing, and it's Leah Schreiber.
Matt, what are your thoughts?
I don't know that I need an Iron Man 3. I liked the first two well enough, and I don't know that Robert Downey Jr. needs more money, but I'm a nerd. I'll see it, and I'll probably like it.
This is going to keep him out of rehab.
Yeah.
So.
I kind of agree with Matt, or I'm a little bit curious. I put this in an article, last week or so, where I'll be interested to see how well these movies do now that the Avengers has passed us.
Avengers set the bar. I mean, these movies cannot be bad.
Well, it's not that they cannot be bad. I'm wondering how they're going to do in terms of audience wise. I don't know. Have we burned the general public out on superheroes? And will Iron Man 3 and Thor 2 do it if it hasn't happened already?
I don't think so.
I would say that the general public, they loved Avengers. They're probably more likely to go see Iron Man 3, Thor 2, just because of how good Avengers did.
We'll see. History of cinema shows us that genres rise and fall, and superheroes have been strong for 10 years, and that's about the time when a fall should start. So we'll see.
So you think that we're at the peak of hero cinema?
I think there's a possibility that we're going to hit maximum overload, critical overload soon, yeah.
Maximum overdrive, that's right.
Oh, God.
Okay, we've got two more to talk about. Let's talk about Cap 2 real quick, The Winter Soldier. I am currently reading The Winter Soldier from Marvel Comics. If you guys have not read that, I strongly recommend it. It is a great series. I think they're on issue 7 right now. Highly recommend it. Go check it out. It'll give you a taste of what the movie could potentially be about. But in the middle of the first Captain America movie, we saw Bucky fall off the train and fall into that ravine, never to be seen again. Well, he's coming back in Captain America 2, which is all about the Winter Soldier, which the Russians take Bucky and they turn him into the equivalent of Steve Rogers, but for the Russians, hence the name. Who is excited about this besides me?
I think they did the best thing that fans could have wanted them to do.
Not cast Lee Schreiber as Bucky.
Well, I'm just assuming that's gonna happen. No, you see Captain America Winter Soldier and it's like, okay, win, next.
Yeah, right. That had to be the second movie.
Yeah.
Matt, what are your thoughts?
I'm thinking getting frozen is not a bad deal because apparently it's incredibly easy to survive this and be turned into a super soldier. So when I die, freeze me and make me come back as a super soldier.
Sure, we'll do it. We'll call you the SMC-er. Jason, give me your thoughts.
Yeah, like Tom said, it's going to be a big win just because the story, it's going to work.
You think
that people loved the first one.
Do you think that this might be the best of the five?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
I think all we know about these five, essentially, is a title card, and of those five title cards, this is the most intriguing title card.
Ah, but then we have the last movie to talk about, Ant-Man.
I just hope they cast Lee Schreiber to play an ant.
Do we want the original Ant-Man? Do we want Pym? Or do we want the guy that they had in Avengers: The Initiative?
What, Eric O'Grady?
Yeah. Which do you think would be better?
I think we want, if we're going to get Ant-Man, and it looks like we're going to get Ant-Man, I guess it should be Pym. I mean,
But see, with Ant-Man, it's not just going to be about him growing and shrinking and talking to bugs all day.
It's going to be a lot about that.
Well, this we're going to get to see Ultron.
Yeah, so that's why it should probably be him. And let me say this, Ant-Man seems like the most superfluous one, but it's the one being directed by Edgar Wright.
Mm.
That's right, so it's not necessarily going to be a straight action film.
It's going to be a good friggin' direct. We all know who Edgar Wright is, don't we?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, okay, good. Yeah. I mean, this is the Scott Pilgrim guy, so that should work out nicely.
It's going to have lots of comedy, it's going to have lots of action, and maybe a little bit of drama. But with Ant-Man, are we going to get to see the Wasp? Are we hoping for that?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Look, I think in a perfect Ant-Man movie, if such a beast exists, yeah, you'd see Ultron, you'd see Hank Pym, you'd see Janet Pym or Van Dyne or whatever her name would be, and then Wasp, and yeah, all that stuff.
Now, they said that Wright had already filmed a small segment for Ant-Man, which is supposed to be at the end of Iron Man 3. I'm hoping that that's the case, so that way that's the next movie that we're going to lead into. But Iron Man 3 obviously is going to be first, followed by whatever comes in, well, followed by Thor, and then we have Guardians and the rest of them. But final thoughts, guys, Marvel's Phase 2, is it a good idea, is it a bad idea, are they using too many lower-class characters, or should they focus on the bigger guys that are left?
They're doing a good mix. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay.
And look, they don't have access to Spider-Man or the X-Men. So they kind of have to go the Avengers route, and they're going to Guardians, of course, Guardians of the Galaxy, which goes outside of that. But they're the best thing to do if they can't get those other two A-list properties, and they don't have Fantastic Four either.
They've got four
A-list properties, and three of them they can't touch. So they might as well pull in as many Avengers as they can.
Now I heard a really cool rumor that Andrew Garfield was going to be in Avengers 2.
I don't see it happening. Sony's got Spider-Man. The reason Amazing Spider-Man was made is just the Spider-Man rights wouldn't lapse from Sony.
Well, look at it this way. They had already made, Sony did, had already made a skyline for the Avengers that had the Oscorp building in it. But due to time constraints, they weren't able to put it in there.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, that would be cool, but...
The only way I can see Andrew Garfield in there, he wouldn't be Spider-Man. He'd just be Peter Parker taking some pictures.
Yeah, Andrew Garfield. If Kelly were here, she'd be fawning all over that. But she's on vacation right now, so...
No, he's dreamy.
Yeah, Emma Stone is dreamy. But, all right, so we're going to take a break for a second. When we come back, we are going to hit up the pull list, the two comics that we chose for the week, which are Harbinger number 2 from Valiant and Planetoid number 2 from Image Comics. We'll be right back.
All right, I'm just going to take a quick look at what's on my pull list. What's this music? What's going on?
Coming this fall on NBC.
What?
A new reality series.
What the hell?
Geek Intervention.
What are you doing in my house?
He was hooked. Addicted. Website.
I'm not addicted to StashMyComics.com.
He couldn't stop cataloging his comic books.
I can stop.
He couldn't stop writing member reviews.
I can stop. I have to go to work.
Locked in a spiral of self-destruction.
It's not...
Inching closer to death with each passing second.
Oh my God. Why are you playing that music?
Wednesdays on NBC.
Well, I'm not watching because Wednesday night is comic book night.
Oh, really?
Yes, really, yes.
Well, it's the new Walking Dead out this week.
Yeah, I'm actually going to the comic book shop now. It's, do you want a ride or something?
Well, if you're going that way, I guess.
All right, let's go. I'm going now.
Geek Intervention, Wednesdays on NBC.
Okay, guys, we are at the pull list right now, and let's talk about Planetoid number 2 first. Matt, this was your idea for everybody to take a read, and I got to tell you, I was not expecting much out of this when I read it. I know you had done a review on Planetoid number 1, and if you guys haven't had a chance to read that, I strongly recommend that because that'll give you kind of a basis for what we're about to talk about for Planetoid number 2. But Matt, go ahead and give us a synopsis of the story thus far with Planetoid number 2 and your thoughts.
Okay. Yeah, we've got a guy by the name of Silas, and from the very beginning, his spaceship is being pulled into an unknown planet. He gets pulled in and finds out that this is not an uncommon event. There are lots of people who are being sucked into this planet and not ever able to leave.
Yeah, because the planet has, like, this mega magnetic pull to it. Yeah.
Correct. And it's kind of a wasteland, much like you might have seen. And the only thing I can really make it, I think of WALL-E for some reason, the Disney movie, where it's just a barren wasteland that looks like.
I was thinking of the junk planet from the animated Transformers movie.
Okay, yeah, that works too. There's a lot of metal and machines, and some of the machines are still alive and very dangerous. And he basically finds out that this used to be a place where humans were used as slaves by machines. So it's kind of got a Star Wars slash Terminator meets whatever. Just really good hard sci-fi, and where we left off, he was kind of finding out that it's not just him and the old man in the planet, but there's a lot of people trying to survive on this planet.
Right. There's a human colony called the Slab, and it's this big, huge construct that they've built to survive in, and Silas has to climb to the top of this thing to find the human colony in what looks like a near perfect representation of the Colosseum in Rome.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's worth noting, I always seem to forget the talented people behind these comics, but the story, art, and lettering all done by one person. That's Ken Gehring. So
that's right.
Props to him. He does it all very well.
So what are your thoughts on this second issue?
I thought it was a nice way to move the series along. I wasn't expecting to see some really cool new characters this soon. I thought it was going to move a little bit slower, but mm-hmm. it actually moved a little bit quickly, and it's quite different from the first issue, which was actually a good thing. So
right. With the first issue, we were talking about this before recording, that I really liked the fact that there was less dialogue in the first issue, and it really set the tone for the series currently. I mean, it's only in issue 2 right now, but if you've read the first issue, you'll know what I'm talking about, because it's just him crashing on this planet. We know nothing about him to start, and he starts wandering, talking to that thing on his wrist, the computerized artificial intelligence that helps him. But it's good, and the only person he meets at the end of issue 1 is the old man, and then in issue 2 we meet Ebo, who's a blue, very tall, muscular alien type guy, and I'm going to call her the redhead because I couldn't find her name anywhere in there.
I know, I couldn't either. And it's also worth noting he has this gun that seems to be extremely powerful.
That's
and,
right.
That's really cool. It's almost like a special sword or something that's magical, and he can, with one shot, take out a huge giant robot, and everybody seems to be in awe of this weapon that he has.
Take out a chunk of the ground that's all metal and machine, too.
Yeah.
Okay, Tom, Planetoid number 2, what did you think?
I dug it. I enjoyed it. I like Matt. I also thought it would move slower than it did. I almost wanted it to move slower than it did. I would have liked a little more establishing of just sort of of Cable wandering around this desolate planet by himself. That was Cable, right?
Oh.
Right? That was Cable, wasn't it? No? I don't know. Oh, all right. But, of course, you know.
It was Liev Schreiber.
Ah, there we go. Good. Well, you know, it's good casting. Of course, in the second issue, he meets the prerequisite comic book redhead hot chick. Yeah, but I dug the concept, the abandoned on the planet. I know I've gone to this well a bunch of times. I don't want to seem obsessed with the series, but it's like Lost in space on the Transformers junk planet. Right down to the strange electromagnetic energy. But you know what? It was intriguing, and it would be enough to get me. Yeah, I'd read a third issue.
Okay, right on. Jason, what are your thoughts?
I liked it. I like the story, but I think I like the art more. I love the stuff drawn in the background, especially like the slab, like you're talking about. The just the amount of detail that's in the background that kind of hooked me in more than the story.
Now, see, the way that I saw the art was I saw the art as perfect for this. Like, the way that Ken Gehring had done the artwork, it was very gritty. It was very hard-edged. It was very dirty, as the story needed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always focus on story. I rarely mention artwork. But, yeah, the artwork was really good for the tone. It gave a great sense of desolation, a great sense of isolation, you know, a great sense of scale in some of those shots. Yeah, you know, that's tough to do in a comic book page, so kudos for that.
When he went down, when he was climbing down the gears to test that liquid, that red liquid, and that giant machine Leviathan came out to try and eat him, you could really tell the scope in that panel right there. I think that was a full page spread, and it looked really, really well.
Yeah.
Yep. Jason, go ahead. We cut you off there.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah. The art fits the book. I like the story. It's very sci-fi. It was very interesting. I want to know, you know, why he's stuck on the planet, why everyone's stuck on the planet, where the electromagnetic stuff's coming from. I'm hooked. I'll keep reading it.
Okay. So, Matt, let's get some final thoughts on Planetoid before we move on to Harbinger. But what would you give it? 1 to 10, what would you give Planetoid number 2?
The second one I'd probably give about an 8.5 out of 10. And, the nice thing about Ken Gehring is, and a lot of people might not know this, but I think he originally just released this digitally and then was able to get it in through Image. So this is a nice example of the little guy, you know, making a great piece of art. And this is probably going to set him up for, you know, quite some time, whether it's doing art for Image or more, you know, writing or whatever, you know.
Right.
So I like the fact that it's a one-person book. You can tell the guy's really passionate about it.
Okay. Tom, final thoughts on Planetoid number 2, 1 through 10. What would you give it?
I'd probably give it a 7. But a 7 would come out that I'd read a third issue. I like the first. I read both 1 and 2. I like the first one better than the second. It's so strange. I almost wish he hadn't met so many people already.
Right, exactly. It should have stayed larger in scope but small in persona, because it would have done a little better.
And there were some examples of telling, tell me your backstory. Here it is. And that's, all right, I don't need that. But ultimately, I'd read it again. And I'd give it a 7.
I could have waited another couple of issues to find out what he was about, because I was already forming my own ideas on where he came from. Was he a soldier? Was he a smuggler? Was he just some guy? You know, what was the deal with Cable? But Jason, 1 through 10, what do you think?
7. It's a strong 7. It's
okay.
It's good. I mean, I can't really say much more than Matt and Tom did.
Okay. For me, I'd give it a 7.5, 7.5. It's stronger for the art. The artwork gets a real solid 8 out of me. I really enjoyed the art. I thought it was very hard, not cold like it should have been, I think, on a Planet of Steel and Junk. But it was very rough, very sketchy, very good, very gritty. The story got a 7.5 out of, or got a 7 out of me, because, like you said, Tom, I'm in 100% agreement with you on that. He met too many people too fast. And I think that it should have just been another issue at least before he met somebody. Because in the first issue, it gives the whole scope that he's alone, and then he meets this one guy. And then the next issue, he sees this whole tribe of people. So, but okay, let's go to Harbinger number 2 from Valiant. If anybody has never read Harbinger number 1, I recommend to go pick it up. You should still be able to get it at your local comic shop. If you can't, just stick around, because it will go to a second printing. But with Harbinger number 2... Let's talk about that. Tom, what did you think?
I'm not sure what I think of this series. And again, I read 1 and 2. I feel like it was well done, and I feel like there are some interesting takes on it, twists to it, the psychokinetic, the breaking out of the mental institution. The two supporting characters who, actually, I'm almost most interested to see what happens to those two supporting characters that he was with.
Right.
That he gets taken away from the end of the issue. I was almost most interested in the two of them. But I can't shake the feeling that I've seen this 100 times before.
Well, did you ever read the original Harbinger when it came out?
No.
No. Okay. So you can't really do frame of reference from the original versus now.
No, I can't.
I read the first issue of the original Harbinger, and I did a review on it. You guys can take a look at it. We'll give a link for you in the synopsis of the show. You can take a look at it there. I gave it a low rating for the original series simply because Jim Shooter, the way that he wrote Harbinger number one, did not appeal to me at all. Because what he tried to do was each issue took place a month apart, like when they came out. And it totally ruined the scope of the story for me because too many things happened too fast. Now, with this, with the new Harbinger, I think Valiant is hitting it out of the park with this. Like, my first response after I finished number two was, hell yes. It was amazing. Joshua Dysart's writing was really, really well done. I mean, from start to finish for this issue, for me, it was exciting. It was fast-paced. I was on the edge of my seat reading this, and when it was done, I didn't want it to be over.
But it was.
But it was.
and you were sad.
I was slightly disappointed because I really wanted Valiant to do good this time around, and they did before. I mean, that's not to say that they didn't, because they did. They were on top for a short time. But, you know, that with whatever happened to them in the past, that's what happened in the past. And after so many years, they came back with Exo, which is amazing, Bloodshot, which I haven't read yet, Chip, but I will. And with Harbinger, I mean, Harbinger is great. Matt, give me your thoughts on this.
I didn't get through the second one yet, but I enjoyed the first one well enough. I am a little familiar with the old series, and I seem to remember in the old series there being something like quite a few of these people with telekinetic abilities, and almost like an X-Men kind of theme where these people are sort of outlaws and there are people after them. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so that's still kind of going on. I mean, the art, everything Valiant has been doing has been extremely solid. This one doesn't appeal to me just because it's less your superheroes in costumes kind of thing, which is more what I'm looking for, more like the X-Men Manowar.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't say enough for the quality of what they're doing. They, like you mentioned, they had been on top for a short amount of time, and if you go back and look at the Valiant stuff, the art is nothing spectacular. But I think they always had a solid solid characters and good enough storytelling, but the art was definitely nothing to write home about, but this time around it certainly is.
Right. I just want to put it out there that Don Perlin, as great of an artist as he was in the past, his work on Bloodshot is not good. I am not a fan of that. Like, I love Kevin Van Hook's writing on the original Bloodshot, but Perlin's art destroys it for me.
Other stuff was so bright. That was my problem with it. Everything is, like, just overrun with bright blues and yellows and oranges, and it almost hurts your eyes.
Yeah. Jason, thoughts on Harbinger number two?
It's like Planet Toy for me. The art was better than the story. Like Tom said, it feels like I've watched this before. I've seen this episode.
Maybe I am just too easy to please when it comes to comic books, but I was enthralled the entire time I was reading it.
It's not a bad story by any means. It's just it's hard to put your finger on for me at least, because it's. I feel like I've read this story before.
It's the millionth time I've read the young boy with extraordinary powers is the chosen one. He's a reluctant hero story.
Well, yeah, but it's.
I know.
Well, and like Tom said, I'm much more interested in seeing the supporting characters than Stanchek or Harada. I mean,
right? Okay.
To see
what happens to Joe and the girl that he made fall in love with him, that he was in love with.
Right.
when he was a kid.
Yeah, she's so far she's a far better character than Staincheck is.
Do you want to say what she said at the end of the issue when he finally released her mind, or should we save that for people to read?
she said she was gonna cut his balls off. That's pretty ballsy writing right there.
The reason for that, though, is in the middle of the first issue, he runs into her and she wants absolutely nothing to do with him, and he uses his powers to make her fall in love with him. And she does, like, she and it even talks about it in the beginning of this issue, where she's so madly in love with Peter that she can't even think straight. And then when he's about to be taken away by Rachel Hobson, for anybody that's ever read the original series, you'll know who she is, and Edward Sedgwick, you'll know who he is, too. When Peter's about to be taken away by them, and he looks at her and he says, go back to normal. Start thinking normal again. She goes spasmodic and starts attacking him, and then when they leave her, she says that to him. I laughed. I thought that was hilarious.
But okay. Interesting character turn, yeah. Yeah.
But okay, let's get some final thoughts on this, and then we'll move forward to some trivia. Jason, 1 through 10, final thoughts on Harbinger.
7, again. Ouch. Art was an 8, story was a 6.
Ouch. Matt, help me out here. Harbinger, what would you give it?
I can't officially score it because I didn't finish it. Obviously, the art is always, like an 8 out of 10 for me, but I'll have to save judgment for the story some other time.
Okay. Tom?
5.5.
Oh, my God.
I really just wanted to hear the reaction, but, yeah, so I'll stick with it.
Valiant, I will save you. I am going to give Harbinger number 2 a 9 out of 10. And
wow.
And the reason being is the artwork got an 8 out of me. And the only reason for that was I wasn't originally a fan of it in the first issue. But reading the second issue, the artwork grew on me. But as far as the story went, I mean, that's 10, bar none. That was an exciting, awesome, amazing, fantastic read for me. It's everything that a comic book should be. No.
Hey, whatever works for you, cowboy.
Ah, go on. I'm going to make you all watch Maximum Overdrive during the next podcast. We're going to take a break for a second, but when we come back, Jason's going to take it away with some trivia. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy. Jason, take it away. What do we got for trivia this week?
We'll have a, like we've had the past couple of times, 1,000 points and a digital comic download.
Is it going to be a mystery this week, or are we going to tell them what it is?
It's a mystery.
Oh, I love mysteries, like mystery men.
We're going to stop using that word. That word's banned off the podcast now.
It's never banned. Ever. Mystery.
We hit our mystery men quota.
It should have gotten an Oscar for best picture.
Okay, well, I'm going to run through these rules just so you'll stop talking about mystery men.
Good call.
Go for it.
To win, you must be a registered member of Stash My Comics. Will you enter your answer in the comments section? You must also put your username on the forums underneath your answer so we can let you know on the forums that you won and give you your download. Anyone that is an admin or works for SMC in any capacity is ineligible. Sorry. The first correct answer wins. Once we have a correct answer, it will be noted in the comments section, and then the winner will be notified. If no winner is found, then the prize is forfeit. We move on. Our winner from the previous podcast is 2Guns365 again, and since he is such a trivia master, we're going to have to put in the 2Guns rule, which says that if you win one week, you are ineligible the following week.
There you go.
But you can win the one after that. So
right.
Take that, 2Guns.
The 2Guns initiative is in effect. Okay, what do we have for the question this week?
Since we are right around the corner from the Batman film, Bane comes from what country?
Oh, go ahead and say that one more time.
Bane comes from what country?
Right on. I can hear the gears turning now. Okay, we're going to take a break, let you guys think about that for a minute. But when we come back, we're going to be doing our weekly distraction. Top three villains in geek culture. Who did we choose? Find out after the break.
Geek Hotline, how may I help you?
Hello. I was looking for a solution on how to better track my comic book collection. I've been using memory and pen and paper for a while, but it's not really working out well for me. What can you suggest?
That's a very good question, sir. I'll have to consult my fax machine.
I don't understand.
Excuse me, sir. I'm going to have to ask you to stay quiet while I concentrate in order to better serve you. Since you broke my concentration, I'm going to have to go over to my next machine here.
Why are you using Morse code? I think I better call back another time.
I'm afraid I'm not getting any answer to your question here. Let me just move over to this next piece of technology that I have.
Is that a foghorn? Am I hearing a foghorn?
Excuse me, sir. I'm sorry. I can't get the answer to your question at this time. But if I can ask you to hold the line, please, I will get that answer for you as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Just drive off. Heck with it. I'll just use stashmycomics.com.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are back with our weekly distraction. Forget the fact that global warming has broken off a piece of the Greenland glacier twice the size of Manhattan. Forget the fact that you may have a flat tire after you're done listening to this podcast. Forget the fact that your wife may or may not be a good cook. Today, it's the weekly distraction. This is what you're going to be talking about for the rest of the week. And on our list today is the top three villains in geek culture. Comic books, movies, books, posters, postcards, you know, you name it, it's there. Matt, let's start with you. Top three villains. Who do you have on your list?
Well, at number three, I chose the Joker. For those of you who don't know, no, I'm just kidding. Everybody knows the Joker. And the reason I chose Joker is because, as a kid, he was probably my favorite villain. You know, I loved the Jack Nicholson version. I loved the Heath Ledger version of the movies. Every time he's in the comics, I get really excited. So that was an easy choice. At number two, I went with Lex Luthor.
Right on.
The thing that really scored him high for me was I went back and read some of the Alan Moore, Swamp Things, and he makes a brief appearance in there, He was doing like a consulting fee on how to defeat the Swamp Thing, and wow. It was something outrageous, like $1 million an hour or something like that. and they paid him, and he figured it out. He figured out how to beat the Swamp Thing within that hour, and I just thought that's so awesome. And
wow,
seeing him on Smallville and this type of thing.
I liked the characterization of Luther on Smallville. I thought that was really good, and how it all. Ended up at the end of the series.
Yeah, and what I like about him is he's a bad guy, but there are certain times when it seems like he legitimately thinks that he's doing the right thing, and I think we all can relate to villains like that.
Like during 52 when he gave everybody powers and then they all started falling out of the sky?
Right.
Who's your number one?
And for number one, I had to go with Dr. Doom. Oh. Just something about... I stuck with all comics for some reason. Those were just kind of the top
Now, the
ones.
Cinematic version of Doctor Doom, or?
Not so much the cinematic, more just the comics.
Are you high?
The
cinematic? Are you? I
try to forget about that movie. Both of those movies.
Okay, so tell me why Doctor Doom made your number one. Why is he... in your eyes, the number one villain in geek culture?
He has a presence to him that I think is unmatched. He's got the metal face. He has the tragic background. He sort of has that dictator thing going. He knows what's good for you, and if you don't know it, then he's going to make sure you know it. And if you have to die because of it, then that's fine with him. I love the way he talks. It's very direct and matter of fact, and a lot of times in third person. And if you talk in third person,
does not agree.
Yeah. If you talk in third person, you're a true villain.
How dare you defile the name of Doom? Well, all right. So that's some pretty good choices. The Joker is number three. Lex Luthor is number two. And Dr. Doom is number one. Tom, let's go ahead to your list. Who do you have in the top three?
Well, first, let me I'll tip my cap on. I think Matt picked the three best villains in comics.
Right on. I agree with that.
So if I was just doing comic books, my list would be identical to his. Maybe shuffled around a little bit. I'd probably put the Joker in front of Lex Luthor, but whatever. Yeah, 1, 2, 3. But I decided I was going to go outside the box a little bit. I actually have nobody from comic books on my particular list. So I'm going to start. And after I mentioned this particular character, I'm going to put a moratorium on me mentioning this series, but I'm going to go with Ben Linus from Lost.
Okay.
There's not a sneakier, more manipulative son of a bitch on TV in the past 10, 15, 20 years. He's so much fun to watch the character and to try and figure out what he's saying that's true and what's a lie. And so much fun watching all the other characters catch up to the idea that this guy never tells the truth, and finally he's kind of put in his place. But it's a great, great character.
The more you talk about that show, the more it makes me want to watch it.
Whether or not you get all the answers you want by the end, it's the entertainment value of watching the show is worth it. Absolutely.
It's one that shows that the journey is better than the destination.
100%. 100%. Yeah. Totally worth it. Number two is the one that's really far outside the box, but I would be remiss, especially on the eve of what we're on the eve of, not mentioning this particular character. I'm going to go with Mr. McMahon.
Really?
From the WWE.
Right, that is a different choice, a very good one, because in the 90s, during the McMahon era, he was one of the most hated people on television.
He probably saved his own company by making himself the biggest bastard.
Right.
And Stone Cold and Vince McMahon ran that company for 5 years.
When Steve Austin hosed him with the beer truck.
Absolutely.
I remember watching that on TV.
Yeah, and Raw 1000 on Monday, so... I'm sorry. Raw 1000 happened this past Monday. Right, got it. Okay. My number one is a character that none of you have probably ever heard of, but it's from the Timothy Zahn series of Star Wars novels that immediately... The first three Star Wars novels that were written after Return of the Jedi, Grand Admiral Thrawn. It's a great series of books that it jumps from character to character point of view, all the favorite characters and some new great characters. You never get into the mind of Grand Admiral Thrawn, who's the Imperial Grand Admiral running the show, and he is a brilliant tactician, and you never get to see the clockwork in motion, so to speak. And again, much like Ben Linus, watching him manipulate his strategies and watching him kind of move through all his machinations is just delightful and wonderful. And what is this guy going to do next, and who is he going to screw up next?
How did he beat out McMahon?
Well, I mean, look, McMahon's a fun choice and a great choice, but for me, Thrawn is an example of a military mastermind, a criminal mastermind. He's one of the best written characters I've encountered in all fiction. Of the whole Star Wars Expanded Universe, which I'm not necessarily a big fan of, Grand Admiral Thrawn is the one character who you're like, gee, I wish that guy had been in the movies, especially the prequels, because they would have been good.
Now, Jason and I had a little side thing going on who was going to be in your list.
Yeah, okay.
And he wasn't in there, but we thought you were going to choose Voldemort.
You know what about Voldemort? I thought I'd put him on the list. I didn't because, he's – Voldemort himself is not as frightening as the idea of Voldemort.
Okay.
That, and, well, and, and,
Yeah, go ahead.
Throughout the films, books, you know, all the Harry Potter stuff, did you hate him more than Dolores Umbridge, though?
No, of course not. That's the thing. I mean, I might have put Umbridge on this list before I put her on.
Thank you. That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the final thing with Voldemort is that, you know, once you finally see who he is, he's pathetic.
Yeah.
Right on.
Aside from being able to kill you.
Well, if you look at the final, especially in the books, in the final sort of his final stand, you see him.
Yeah.
He's just a tired old man holding a stick, and it's really well done.
Okay. Well, let's go to my list. My list is nearly different from yours and Matt's, but my number three is Freddy Krueger.
Nice.
Now, everybody that's ever seen Nightmare on Elm Street has to admit that at one time or another, you were afraid to go to sleep.
Yeah.
I mean, after watching a film like that, when you're laying in bed and you're about to drift off and you're like, uh-oh.
My sister even actually had a dream where Freddy was chasing her.
Oh, wow.
and she did the whole, it's not real thing or whatever, and was able to wake up.
Wow. That character, he's my favorite horror villain, and the films are some of my favorites. I watch him to this day. I love him. I enjoy him. Three and four are bar none some of the best in the series. But Freddy Krueger, to me, embodies everybody's fear of dying in your sleep or having a nightmare that kills you or things like that. But, I mean, just the claws, the way that he looks, the melted face and his attitude. Robert Englund was and is an amazing actor, and he made Freddy Krueger what he was. But moving forward, my number two was Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on several lists that I looked at, Vader was in the top three, and timeout.com, I was looking at their list of top 50 villains of all time, and Vader was their number one. He's my number two, mainly because he's Vader. I mean, he could kill you with a thought. He was manipulative. He made people do what he wanted them to do, and you just hated him throughout episodes 4, 5, and 6. And one of the best scenes ever is when he's talking to Luke in The Empire Strikes Back after chopping off his hand, you know, and then he reveals that he's his dad, and Luke's going insane because of it, and Vader's like, come on, join me. We'll rule the galaxy together as father and son. I loved it. Loved it.
You know, my favorite Vader villain scene might be the one where he's on the video screen appointing someone else an Empire commander, and behind him the other commander's like choking out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Revealed me for the last time.
Yeah.
You are in command now.
Well, the other one's dying, yeah.
But my number one choice was Khan Noonien Singh from Star Trek, specifically Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. He was the screen presence for him, for Ricardo Montalban as Khan, was amazing. I mean, when Chekhov and the other captain from the Reliant go down to SETI Alpha, what they think is SETI Alpha 6, to start stuff for the Genesis Project, to recreate a planet, to make it habitable for whatever the Federation wants to put on there. They find what's left of this crashed ship, and then it's revealed that it's Khan. And you know, months after they were left on SETI Alpha 5, SETI Alpha 6 exploded, and it shifted the rotation of the planet, causing it to become this desert world. They survived for years and years until they were discovered again. Khan proceeds to take over the Reliant and then go immediately after Kirk. And the entire movie, if nobody's ever seen it, which if you haven't, then you've lived under a rock or a laser disc for your entire life. But just how focused he is on decimating Kirk in any way that he can throughout the entire film. And then When Kirk thinks he's bested him, Khan says over the speaker, "I don't need to kill you. I've hurt you, and I'm going to go on hurting you, and I'm going to keep hurting you and hurting you and hurting you." Ugh, it was amazing.
Even though Kirk and Khan were never on screen together?
Doesn't matter, because the chemistry that them two had in the film was... That's good acting right there. William Shatner is who he is, but Ricardo Montalban, oh, he's amazing. Fantasy Island. But anyways. Khan is my number one. So, Jason, let's go ahead with yours. What's on your list?
All right. Starting at three, Agent Smith from Matrix.
Okay.
Not so much Matrix Reloaded or the other one.
The Matrix.
The Matrix, where he's part of the system.
And right. Not
because that whole metaphor of him being part of the system, he's the man, that's what made him great. And then when he wasn't part of it, the character kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
Second one, obviously Darth Vader. I don't think it's a secret. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. And there's not really more that you can say about Darth Vader being on a top three villains list. My number one, we never said they had to be characters, so I went with George Lucas.
Jeez, man. Come on.
He's got a good reason for it, though. I mean, look at Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Please don't look at that.
tell us why George Lucas is your number one villain in geek culture.
If you look at any villain, they've never gotten... a group of people so upset about what they do besides George Lucas. He's the master at getting people pissed off at him.
Yeah, that's true. The prequels being one aspect, Jar Jar Binks being another.
I won't even say the prequels. Just him going back with the special editions, changing the original trilogy. I think that upset people more than the prequels did, because after the first two, you're just like, these movies are terrible.
Go ahead, Matt.
I was say, especially the one thing that makes I don't get too bent out of shape about it, but I do agree that him not allowing the original cuts to be available on the DVDs, it's ridiculous.
Did he not allow the original cuts available though as like a
one time
thing? Yeah, on DVD.
One time, but they were the worst transfers possible.
Yeah, and he did that on
and so here's what you want, but it was the worst transfer that he could do on the film. It was terrible.
Now the one thing that I that really made me not like George Lucas was changing the voice of Boba Fett. Like, if you watch the original trilogy, it was terrible. If you watch the original trilogy, he's got a certain sounding voice. I can't remember the actor's name, but he only spoke a couple of times.
He's got three lines.
But those three lines are important. You know, when Vader's carting away Han Solo and, Boba Fett says, well, he means something to me. The way that he said it in that movie was great. And then they took... the actor that was Jango Fett and used his voice for Boba Fett. I know that Boba Fett is an exact clone of Jango Fett, and he was raised by Jango, but still. Don't
one of the failings of that of those films. He upsets me more for changing Star Wars. It's like he put these films out, and people loved them. They latched onto them. It was... I'm a very big believer that once you put art out in the public domain, it's no longer yours.
It should belong to the public at that point.
It belongs to the fans, and then him coming back and saying, wait, no, these weren't done, let me finish them, it kind of smacked fans in the face a little bit.
Now, what about, like, the remasters of the original series for Star Trek, using that as an example? I mean, they took that... And even though the episodes are now out for the public to enjoy in its original form, what they did with the remasters and redoing the CGI, that really made a difference in the way that it was viewed, at least for me.
Well, that's because they're not adding anything or taking anything out. They're just cleaning it up and making it...
No, they took out the original special effects and added all new special effects.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. They're not taking out scenes or adding scenes in that weren't part of it. They're just enhancing the special effects, making things look better. And whereas Lucas just kept throwing things on the screen because he thought it wasn't busy enough in the background.
Okay, that's fair enough. But it was he wrong in updating the look of it? Like when the special edition came out for the original trilogy, and he did the updates and did the better CGI and added the extra stuff in there, did that really take away that much from the film?
No, but that's not what I'm arguing about. I'm arguing him adding more stuff in and then changing, like, Han shooting first.
Yeah, we've talked about that at length, and I want to bring that discussion here on the podcast. I disliked that scene to the highest extent. Like, in the original, where he's talking to Greedo, and he's keeping Greedo occupied so he can unhook his blaster, and then when he says, "I bet you have," and shoot Greedo from underneath the table, that was so good. And you said it right, Jason, when it showed that Han Solo was
not someone to be trifled with.
That's right. He could be ruthless. And then when Lucas changed that and he made Solo jerk his head in a Michael Jackson maneuver and then jerk it back and shoot Greedo while Greedo shot and missed from 3 feet away, that ruined it for me.
Guys, it's been 16 years. Can we put the Han shot first argument to bed, please? Come on.
No, because if
16
it was,
years, dude, if it come was, on.
If it was a simple case of...
It is.
No, it's not, because it goes to the point where it starts affecting his character.
It doesn't affect your life.
No, I didn't say it affected my life. I said it affected Han's character.
It's affecting my life right now.
Well, good.
George Lucas, look, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I don't think everything he did in the... I've written an article on the site in defense of the prequels. I don't think everything he did in those prequels is good. I don't think they're better than the original trilogy. I don't think all the stuff he added... I think in every special edition, there's one glaring thing he did that is ridiculous. I don't care. He can do whatever he wants. They're his movies. He owns them. He financed them out of his own pocket. He created them. He imagined them. They're his movies, and to say otherwise is spoken like someone who's never created art.
How can you say they're his movies when he didn't direct? How can you say that when he didn't direct Empire or Return?
Okay, there were other creative people involved in those films. They're his property. He wrote them. He wrote the prequels, and Empire and Return of the Jedi. He produced the properties, and he was as a hands-on producer as you could possibly have. This is universe.
But he wasn't responsible for the direction of it.
But he still owns it. Think of it like as a comic book writer. Think of the directors of those two films as comic book writers who do work for hire. When Marvel comes in and changes, you know, the origin of Wolverine, even though that's not what the original creator intended, he can't say boo. George Lucas owns those things locked. They're the most expensive independent films ever created.
That would be fine if it wasn't coming from a man who once argued in front of the Senate once everybody that's involved in a film's dead, you can't make any more changes. And last time I checked, Irvin Kershner's still dead.
This is the way that I see it. Maybe
they can put him into the next one. I don't know.
The way that I see it is
CGI Irvin Kershner.
Leave Stryver. When you create something like that, like when somebody creates a masterpiece on canvas or in film, the original, once it's put out there, should belong to the public at that point. If you want to bring it back and change it, would Da Vinci have been right to do that to the Mona Lisa or to the Last Supper? I don't know. But, I mean, with Lucas and Star Wars, was he right in taking the movies back and changing them by doing the special edition stuff?
Well, as an artist, he's OCD. I mean, a work of art, as Da Vinci said it,
a work of art is never complete, it's only abandoned. Eventually, at some point, you've got to let them go, and just as for his psychological well-being, he should let them go. But I can't kill him for going back to what is his and tweaking it if he wants to.
Okay, well, we'll end it at that. We're coming to the end of our show. Yep. Before we go, though, I want to give a shout-out to our merchandise store, Zazzle.com. Please go there, support us, buy a T-shirt, buy a bumper sticker, buy a hat, buy a coffee mug. I know I'm going to. Also,
we have socks.
We have what?
Do we have socks?
Socks. If not, yeah, we eat them.
Hey, yeah, I just listened to last week's podcast. Do we sell enemas now?
Enemas?
That's courtesy of Jason Newcomb.
If you want your Stash My Comics enema, go to zazzle.com/StashMyComics.
It's got our logo on it, whatever there.
But while you're getting that soapy goodness shot out of you, you need to be wearing one of our T-shirts, or at least.
Yeah.
Also, make sure to hit up one of our sponsors, Longbox Graveyard. Go to longboxgraveyard.com. It's perpetually the 1970s there all the time. And Paul O'Connor, who is the mastermind behind that and behind our Dollar Box column, he writes some really great articles. Strongly recommend to take a look at it. Paul will be joining us on a podcast within the next couple weeks, so you guys need to keep an eye out for that, keep an ear open. Right now, Jason's going to take it away, Jason Newcomb, with telling us about Twitter and Facebook and everything else about Stash My Comics. Please don't be afraid to leave your comments in the comments section. Two Guns, you can't guess on this trivia.
You can guess, but you won't win.
Right.
Suck it. I got two words for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of here.
1, 2, 3. StashMyComics.com is the leading free online interactive comic book database. Catalog your comics and track prices, character, and creator appearances. Follow the daily blog reviews, editorials, and a weekly podcast. Connect with other fans through member reviews and discussion forums. Keep abreast of site updates on Twitter at StashMyComics and find us on Facebook. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy.
Nailed it.